Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Thursday edition of Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalkRadio.com. I am your host, Rick Hale, and I am here with Karen Winning Frazier. Hey, Karen.
Winning?
Yeah, Winning.
What the hell's that mean?
The Charlie Sheen thing.
Oh, winning!
Yeah. I wonder if it was lost on anybody else. So, this is Karen and Rick. We are the voice of ParanormalUnderground.net, your favorite paranormal magazine. So, Karen.
Everybody's favorite everything, right, Rick?
Everything. Everything. So
I know. So, I have to tell you, I feel, and he's listening in the chat room right now, so... Hold on to your hat, poor guest coming up, David Roundtree, because I'm kind of sarcastic bitch tonight. I've got this thing going on.
hold on a second, Karen. You know, we recently got that email about people complaining about the language on the show, so, you know, watch. We don't want to offend anybody.
Bitch is actually not a swear word.
Oh, okay.
Come on. It's dogs.
That's right. Female dog.
No.
So, sarcastic bitch then. Proceed.
Yes, yes. So, anyway, yeah, kind of cranky and sarcastic tonight. Not quite sure what's going on. I'm sure that, you know, I'll get over it. Maybe I should be drinking.
No, that's not always a good thing.
True.
So, I am on super awesome vacation this week. It's about time.
What am I doing?
I am spending time with my wife and the future greatest paranormal investigator of all time, Theodore Nicholas. So
he is so cute. Your wife put pictures up on Facebook of just, you know, she's got this little running thing of all his pictures, and she had him in that little bear suit in like a front pack. What an adorable kid.
Yeah, he is. You know, it goes all the way back to when we had the embryos. I was taking the embryos from one doctor's office to the other. For anybody who doesn't know, we had to, you know, go through some fertility treatments in order to have the future world's greatest paranormal investigator. So,
well, yes, he is a good looking kid, and he looks like he's an absolute joy. So, and I can say that from my lofty perch as a parent of a 14-year-old. You know, so there you
go. See, and that's what I'm worried about. Right now, he's cute and cuddly, and yeah, there's always the poopy diapers. That's what I'm worried about, that one day he is going to become a 14-year-old.
He is, and my 14-year-old says to me, you know, Mom, I'm going to be 15 in August, and by this time next year, I'll be 15 and a half. Yes, in the state of Washington, I don't know how it is elsewhere, but in the state of Washington, that's when they can learn to drive.
Oh, that's the way it is here too. At 15, you can get your learner's permit and classes.
Not looking forward to that. So hey, I got to tell you, Rick, I'm boring the crap out of us right now.
No, not at all.
I kind of am. It's a sarcastic bleep thing.
Well, I just learned something. You know, I just want to talk about this. I just learned something that was pretty heartbreaking. Recently. One of the places that every paranormal investigator and researcher wants to get into in northern Illinois has just recently been closed down. I'm talking about the Mineola Bay, which is right up the street from me here in Fox Lake. And the mayor has decided to completely condemn the building. Yeah, the building was falling down around everybody's ears, and it was, you know, kind of a blight on the lake. However, for years, it's been, you know, said that the place was haunted. I've actually spoken to some of the people who have worked there in the past, and they're like, yeah, you know, occasionally we'll see like the spirit of a man dressed in 1940s clothing. But one of the most interesting spirits that's said to haunt this place is up in the hotel area. Apparently, the urban legend around here goes that there's like this malicious, evil, monstrous spirit that lives up in the top portions of the Mineola Bay. And And if he gets a hold of you, he's going to throw you out a window, which is, you know, why all the windows are all boarded up and, you know, blackened out and all that. So, you know, unfortunately, this is a place that I've always wanted to get into, and I have tried, and now it's condemned and will probably be torn down. It is a sad, sad day.
That is sad, but there, I have two things to say to you, and realize that my opinions are not necessarily the opinions of Paranormal Underground Radio. Mm-hmm. There's always breaking and entering. That's the first thing. I don't actually recommend that to people, but the other thing I gotta say is that the mayor
send all complaints to Taps Family Radio.
So, and the other thing is that the mayor,
mm-hmm.
he just needs to nut up, man.
Yeah, I need to go have a talk with that guy and be like, you know, hey, come on, dude, can you just please let me in just for 5 minutes? I want to either prove or disprove that there is this evil malicious entity on the, you know, on the third and fourth floors throwing people out windows. So.
Totally. So
I guess I'll never be able to do that.
You know, Rick, because mm-hmm. I am so spectacular at what I do, my fame continues to grow. Because I am at least the most famous person in my house right now. All the dogs know who I am. The teenagers usually do.
Same here.
See, okay, but there are more in my house than you, so I am more famous than you. However, I'm telling you this for a reason, because I have recently been asked to record a public service announcement, and so we have the world premiere of that public service announcement right now.
Cannot wait to hear it.
Every day across America, ghosts are leaving haunted locations in droves. They're leaving because ghost hunters bore the crap out of them. They've already told you their names, and they don't really believe you care about why they're there. Ghost hunters, please help preserve America's ghost habitats by coming up with better questions. We'll all be better off if you do.
Huh?
See, now that actually works, because, you know, when you're watching all the television shows and all that, and they're like, you know, the same questions over and over again. What's your name? Is there anybody here who would like to give their presence? And I just want to be like, God, would you please just ask something original? Shut up and just be conversational. You have to, I mean, they were once people, too.
That's right. And those people who can only come up with what is your name? Why mm-hmm. are you here? They're destroying ghost habitats all around the world, and, you know, I'm for the whole green ghost habitat preservation thing, so.
I know I would be bored to tears, you know, being asked those questions. Rick, are you here right now? You know what? If I ever get a chance to be a ghost one day, I am totally going to screw with people wherever I'm haunting.
Totally.
I'm going to make them believe that I am the most evil demonic entity on the face of the planet and have fun doing it the whole time.
Right on. So here's what I think that we'll do. We're going to, we have, of course, our new sponsor that's paying us big bucks to advertise on our show. So we'll mm-hmm. do the ad from our new sponsor as we go to commercial break here. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to David Rowntree, and we're going to be talking about really cool stuff. He's into quantum physics, although I told Rick that I would not hit that real hard because, apparently, I become even duller than I am right now when I do it. So, when we come back, we'll be talking with David Rowntree. And so, first, a word from our new sponsor, and then a couple of other words. We'll be right back on Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Guy Who Wants His Own Paranormal TV Show.
Mr. Guy Who Wants His Own Paranormal Show.
You wear your beans with pride and your t-shirt three sizes too small, even though you have the body of a 98-pound video game nerd. Every location you visit may have a gift shop and thousands of visitors, but somehow you still get possessed by something evil.
You're dragging me straight to hell.
It may look like a bug to the rest of the world, but to you it's a demonic orb, and it wants to eat your soul. So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Mr. Overly Dramatic. Your acting may not be all that great, but you sure look awesome every time you see yourself in the mirror.
The guy who wants his own paranormal show.
Budweiser Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
location identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
And we call that, my friends, the Rick Disclaimer.
Yeah, we need that with me because I wind up offending somebody and I'm just going to get us sued.
It's so, usually me. I go home. I go to bed every night or every Thursday night after the radio show and cry my little eyes out.
So I thought you were going to say thinking of me.
I do think of you. Before we introduce our guest, I wanted to thank the big wolf, Wade West, for doing the vocals of that Bud Light commercial. He was just awesome. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, I think that's really funny. I would love to see something like that on television. I think that'd be great. So, everybody, welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio. I am your host, Rick Hale, and I am here with Karen. She has tiger blood in her veins, Frazier. Tonight, for our guest, we have Mr. David M. Rowntree. David is the author of Paranormal Technology, Understanding the Science of Ghost Hunting, which you can actually see in our February issue, and it was written up by Rob Demarest, former GHI member. In 1992, David created the Scientific Paranormal Investigative Research Information and Technology, or SPIRIT. That's pretty clever.
group. It's one of your better acronyms, I've got to say. Some of them really suck, but that one works.
You know what? You know, David, much like myself, you're kind of an old schooler. Doesn't it kind of make you a little bit sad that everything is an acronym these days?
Well, first of all, let me say, hey, guys, thanks for having me on.
Well, welcome to the show, David. Sorry, we're just going to get into the meat of things. Put you in the hot seat.
Let's just jump right in here. Yeah, no, I agree with you. Everything has initials nowadays. It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
In the old days, we had to come up with a name that would twist your tongue around and cripple people. So, hence the whole 242 consonants and 374 vowels in the name of your organization. But yeah, I agree with you.
I think back in my first investigation in 1990. Oh, I'm sorry, we had a lag there. Sorry about that, David.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
I was going to tell you, that's why I go with the whole K-phrase thing, you know, because it's not an acronym, and it's kind of the hip now thing. I couldn't work out like a P. Diddy kind of thing. I couldn't get the Diddy or the Izzy or the, K-phrase Izzy.
Yeah, see, what's cool about the one that I have, though, is I just call it Spirit Lab, and it works.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, and then if people ask you what it stands for, then you can go there. Yeah.
My question would be, do you really want to know?
Yeah, really. If I tell you, I have to kill you. And you'll
how
know.
Much? Yeah, that's right. How much do you want it? How badly do you want it?
That's right.
I don't know. I think back in the day, I was just like Captain Creepy, the ghost hunter. So, you know, that was basically it.
Yeah, that's what I remember known as. I remember waking up to Casper, the original TV.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So, you know, David, thanks for coming on the show, and I hope it won't be too painful for you. I usually ask that of all our guests, like through an email or whatever, but now your
book... He apologizes in advance.
I apologize in advance.
That's okay, because I have fun. I'll have fun with or without you, so come along. Let's go.
Groovy. All right, cool, man. Well, I like you.
I like you, you like me.
Oh, not the purple dinosaur, please.
Anyway, so Rick, you were saying.
Yeah, the you know, I wanted to, you know, to get in, you know, of course, in your book, Paranormal Technology, Understanding the Science of Ghost Hunting. You know, that seems to be the real popular thing these days when it comes to, you know, sort of the new school methodology and techniques, that it's all, you know, science, 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 science. Nothing else matters. There's, you know, ghosts are nothing more than something to look at and ask dumb questions for. You know, with paranormal technology, the science of ghost hunting, and you really focus a lot on EVPs. You know, can you tell us a little bit about your, you know, EVP research?
Well, I focus on a lot of things, actually. EVP is actually the breakthrough phenomena that opened the door to discovering a lot of other things about the paranormal. Mm-hmm. But I had a theory for many, many years that EVP was being caused by electromagnetic fields in the audio spectrum, and it took about 15 years before the technology was available that I could put it together and prove it. So there was a very long period of frustration between my 75-pound TEC A4010S reel-to-reel recorder and the advent of, you know, digitized technology and laptop computers and analytical software. But primarily, what we do is we use very simple equipment. We use dynamic microphones. We use high-quality digital broadcast-quality recorders. Mm-hmm. And we don't go around asking silly questions or asking people if they know their dad or that sort of thing.
Oh, so you agree with my public service announcement then?
Yeah, we wire a house to gather data, and then we let it run. We let everything run.
Right.
And we find that the quality of the evidence is far better. There's not a bunch of people squealing and jumping up and down, screaming they have a spike interfering with the... that we do capture.
Yeah.
So, I mean, essentially we wire a house like you would a concert stage to do a rock concert.
Cool.
Interesting.
So what are you using for your recorders?
Right now we're using a bevy of Tascam DR 07s. They have since been... they've stopped making them, but they're still available online. And hence, instead of $300, they're selling for $99 when you can find them now. And it's a great,
nice.
It's a great buy for the money. It has built-in Electret mics, which are great for doing interviews, but lousy for getting EVPs. But it's very easy to plug in a portable Rolls external mixer that you can put right on your belt pack and put two different mics into it and zam away with it in the palm of your hand, and you've got. Broadcast quality audio on your belt.
I was feeling pretty spectacular about my Zoom H4 until you came along, sir.
Well, Zoom's fine too. Don't get me wrong. Zoom's a fine recorder. I'm not talking down about the Zoom.
I know. I'm just
But that is the kind of quality of recorder that you want. You know, you want a recorder that doesn't put more artifacts on your recording than the background noise does. And most of these small Olympus recorders that are voice recorders that, as seen on TV, became so popular, just their nature and their construction adds a lot of noise to the recording that can be misconstrued and be false evidence. So.
Or they they also, I think they obfuscate a lot of the things that you hear. Mm-hmm. So
well, they create a lot of things.
Yeah.
In and of themselves. They're very poorly shielded, so they're prone to a lot of interference from natural sources, and it's very difficult to pick that out unless you've got some very expensive spectrum analyzing equipment running at the same time, which we happen to do that. But,
so I would like to ask you, when you said that they the natural sources thing, that they do natural sources, they pick things up from natural sources. Can you explain that?
Sure, there's thousands of things that will create false EVPs. Even radio frequencies, not the radio frequencies themselves, which some people believe, unfortunately, that radio frequencies cause EVP.
Yes.
They can indirectly cause them, not in and of themselves, but by beating against each other and having a differential in the two frequencies emerge. In other words, if you have two frequencies of broadcasting and they're very close to each other, they can beat against each other and leave a differential between the two frequencies, and oftentimes that differential is modulating in the audio spectrum, and you will pick up interesting noise. And, of course, with a very imaginative person in a dark room could imagine it saying most anything. But a lot of these things can cause it. Close proximity to an AM radio station can cause some really weird stuff to come through your unshielded recorders. Not to mention low-frequency generating EMF in a household can also be picked up, such as a slowly rotating ceiling fan. Or
what are those going to sound like? Are they going to be the whispers that you get on your EVPs?
Yes, you can get things that sound very whisper-like that are very close to if you almost think you can understand it, but it's just not quite, you just can't quite make it out. It's generally from some type of natural source or man-made source that's generating that.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say that.
Raise your hand. I can see.
I can raise my hand. Yeah. You know, Karen and I, we have like this thing that we EVPs that we call, you know, Cookie Monster EVPs. You know, it's
not, go. You're going to die.
Well, I mean, it sounds like the you know, like the cookie, like the Cookie Monster is talking.
Oh, yeah.
But But if you guys, you know, with your evidence, are you a believer that, you know, hey, if you need subtitles for it, it's just not an EVP? Do you throw that kind of thing out?
We have a classification for our EVPs, mm-hmm. and this is how we classify an EVP. What you do is you take your EVP. Now, I have an email list of probably approximately 8,000. So I randomly pick 5 people from my email list, and I send them the copy of the file and suspect. Mm-hmm. And I ask them, what do they hear? And if I get back 5 answers that are very similar or the same, we have an EVP.
Right.
If I get back 5 different answers, we got interesting noise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's that simple. I don't have class A, B, or C. I have you can understand what it says or you don't.
Right.
And we generally...
We have class A, B, C, and either Cookie Monster / Corn.
I'm sorry. Well, eventually...
Corn with a K.
Okay. But, and consequently, after 35 years of research, I have less than 200 EVPs.
That's reasonable.
But the 200 EVPs, there's no question of what the content is. You don't have to prep anyone in saying, hey, hear this? It says, hand me the salt shaker. You know, you don't have to do that. The EVP does it for you.
So tell me this, though, then. You know what the content of the EVPs are that you have, but the source still has to remain speculation or theory, correct?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I know exactly what causes an EVP. I know I can speculate as to where it originates from.
Okay.
But it's an emerging property. We discovered last year that EVP and haunting phenomena in general is an emerging property. It emerges into the environment from a specific spot in a location. It just emerges, meaning it appears out of nowhere. Only that doesn't make any sense and it violates physics. So we had to come up with a reason why it did that. It turns out it looks like it's wormholes. It looks like what happens is all of these things that people have been measuring for years that they think they're measuring a ghost, they're actually measuring the effects on the environment that happens when a wormhole opens up and exotic matter mixes with our own.
So is this kind of like you, David, is this kind of like your way of explaining that, first off, ghosts obviously don't have lungs or vocal cords.
That's correct.
So is this kind of like your way of explaining how they're able to communicate with us?
Actually, it's my way of explaining what could be creating all the things we've been measuring.
Okay.
There's only like one thing in science that would explain it. And that's what we have. We have a wormhole. That's what we have left. See, here's the things that happen at a paranormal, what I call now a paranormal event horizon. You'll have elevated ion counts. You'll have mysteriously low frequency appearing EMF low frequency carriers that have information riding on that low frequency carrier. You just can't, you know, you can tell that the waveform's busy as it you know, travels through its frequency. You get elevated static levels of DC current in the air. You get elevated ability of the air to conduct electricity. You get elevated ion counts. You get spikes, very high spikes of gamma radiation, which usually doesn't occur in someone's living room unless their living room's built over a uranium mine. So all of the things put together, dramatic drops in barometric pressure, some temperature fluctuations, changes in barometric pressure. There's a lot of things that go on in this event horizon, which tends to be very localized, very small.
And, I find that incredibly fascinating because one of my favorite authors, Philip Imbrogno, he theorizes that ghosts are nothing more than a visitor from another dimension, or somehow, you know, time is crossing with our time in another time.
Well, he's close to being right, but he missed the boat, because when he says dimension, he totally missed the boat, because the only thing that can survive in a dimension is a string.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay?
So it has to be something of multiple dimensions that any kind of life form is coming from. What I think happens, first of all, what started me on this whole hypothesis that I went down here is, what's the common denominator in near-death experiences that everyone reports? It's almost universal.
The light.
Light.
The long tunnel and the light at the end of it, right? Which is kind of exactly what a wormhole would look like if you were to travel through one.
Well, true. Wow. Yeah.
I never even thought of that before. That's incredible.
Well, okay. I mean, that was what started me, just a simple commonsensical thing, you know, hey, what could cause that effect? What in science could create that? Let's throw away the idea that we're, you know, just dying of starvation from oxygen and our brain is doing weird things.
Right.
Let's look at it from a different aspect and see if we can come up with an answer. So once we came up with that kind of concept and said, hey, maybe this is what it is, then we started talking with other physicists and stuff and trying to figure out how we could measure something like that in the environment. And it turns out there's ways to detect it. And the ways would be if, for example, to keep a wormhole stable, you would need exotic matter, which is matter that has a negative mass. If exotic matter came into contact with our matter, unlike antimatter, which would cause a violent annihilation at an atomic level, creating a huge crater, much like Nagasaki and Hiroshima, with exotic matter, you would be actually having the annihilations occurring at a subatomic level, which means you would get pretty dramatic spikes of gamma radiation, and they would be very transitory, so you'd be getting these little pops of gamma bursts. And we're getting pops that we've measured up to 350 millirads an hour, which is a lethal dose if it was a continuous dose of gamma radiation. So that's telling us that something, that a pretty violent annihilation is occurring at a subatomic level. So that means we've got some kind of mix of matter that's just not playing fair with our own matter. And then once that matter annihilates below the stability point, the wormhole collapses, paranormal event ends, only to reoccur at some point down the road at some unpredictable time that may be predictable from where the wormhole originated from, but certainly doesn't have any rhyme or reason.
Do you think that this can explain, you know, the, you know, people?
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. We had another lag there. I'm really sorry about that. We get really bad lags. It's like a Skype thing. Do you think that
it's wormholes?
Or it could be wormholes. Yeah,
it's probably that.
But
yeah, I have one around here sometimes. My car keys.
Do you have the pocket wormhole? That doesn't sound right.
And it's called my toilet. Now, David, do you think that this could, you know, also explain how people are, you know, gifted with psychic abilities?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think it explains the nature of the source of the information they get.
Okay.
Or it could. We've run a series of experiments with a very very famous medium, and we have noticed that this emerging low-frequency carrier, EMF, is present when they're getting information. And when they stop getting the information, it's because that wave, that carrier wave, is no longer present. We noticed it now on two different experiments, and it exactly timed in every time with the flow of information. And I've had a theory for a long time. Well, let's call it a hypothesis. It's not fully a theory, but I've always thought that psychics and mediums were kind of like biological television sets, where they actually received this information, much like a broadcast, and they had the ability to decode that and have it play in their mind just like it was a movie, and it's like a 3D movie that they're immersed in. Sometimes they're part of it. Sometimes they're witnessing it. But either way, it's kind of like going to Epcot, you know?
And
walking into this 3D environment that's being sent to you. And when I talk with psychics and mediums, they relate, yes, that's kind of exactly what it is. It's like I'm a part of it. It's like I'm inserted into this environment. And
it's almost like a waking dream, huh?
It's amazing how this waveform seems to appear every time they start picking up information. So we're thinking that maybe there's something to that, that maybe this is some type of emerging transmission, and it's very low frequency, so the source of it doesn't have to be like a radio transmitter or anything like that. It could be organic in origin. We don't know. But it's very low frequency, between 2 hertz and 7 hertz, sometimes 8 hertz. It has information riding on the waveform itself, so it's like it's carrying additional information, and all the low frequency EMF is, it seems to be the carrier of it. But it emerges, and it's present the entire time they're getting their information, and then it collapses, and they no longer get information until they reinitiate it, which brings up an interesting point. Are they initiating it because it seems like they are? It seems like when the medium prepares themselves to go into their open condition to receive information, they are initiating the formation of this emerging EMF. Now, are they just like lighting themselves up and something's targeting them, or... You know, are they initially opening this wormhole themselves? I don't know. But it's certainly pretty fascinating right now what we've been finding out, looking at this stuff and realizing that, yes, Virginia, you can measure some of the stuff in the environment, and we should be doing that. So
that's kind of groovy. So I have I have a question, just sort of based on what you've been talking about, because, and I promised Rick I wasn't going to talk about quantum physics, but people know that I'm a liar. And so
it's impossible not to talk about quantum.
It is.
Quantum mechanics is part of the mix.
Yes. So my hypothesis, and you're right, it can't even be a theory because I've never done anything other than just sort of formulated this, is that psychic energy happens, or that psychic moments happen because there's a connection between particles. And if you look at the, where the quantum spin, where when one particle changes, its twin particle does at the same time. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Well, that's called entanglement. Yeah.
Entanglement. Exactly. Thank you. And so
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I think that entanglement is what causes the psychic stuff.
Well, entanglement certainly is part of the mix because you can't have any of the other quantum effects occur without entanglement. Mm-hmm. So what we're actually seeing in the paranormal field is a macro demonstration of quantum mechanics, which normally occurs at a micro or subatomic level. We're seeing macro versions of it, which they are starting to see in astrophysics as well, and in cosmology, they're starting to see quantum effects in a macro scale, which is making me think that, you know, the model of the atom is the model of the solar system, is the model of the universe, is the model of the multiverse, you know. The whole thing is a repeat, just like I believe the wormhole that we're dealing with is a very special type of dual entangled wormhole that looks an awful lot like a DNA molecule in that it's a double helix construct.
Oh, well, that's really goofy.
Yeah.
And that each tube is counter-rotating, which is what locks it together into its entanglement. And then they share a common throat, which is where the holographic boundary would be, in which a consciousness would project its energy to create a version of itself that would be pretty much a 3D hologram of what they probably look like in life or what they want you to think they look like.
So this totally squares with the laws of thermodynamics then, doesn't it? Because you're...
Well, here's the funny thing. Now, in order for me to make the wormhole theory now that I'm developing, because we are doing the experiments and we are getting other people to replicate them and they're coming up with similar things, I had to create also a multiverse theory to explain where the wormholes come from and how they manifest. So it boils down to what I came up with called the stewpot theory, which essentially you have this big stewpot, and inside of the stewpot, first of all, the stewpot itself is a holographic boundary in which the multiverse exists in, a big pot. And nothing comes in, nothing comes out. It's a balanced system. You may have 10 to the 10 to the 10 to the 6th number of universes inside this pot, boiling around in exotic matter. The exotic matter acts as an insulator, keeps them all from bumping into each other and having huge catastrophic events. But occasionally a brain or even a massive, supermassive black hole will pour matter from one universe into another, and you will have a contracting universe feeding an expanding universe, but the energy all stays in the boiling pot. It just bounces from universe to universe to universe. So you're literally not violating any laws of energy conservation. You're just distributing that energy from one universe to the next, to the next, to the next. So
well, that makes a lot of sense to me.
It's in a constant state of dynamics. Everything is changing constantly. That's why our universe is still accelerating outwards and expanding, because we didn't have a Big Bang. The Big Bang breaks down mathematically about 35 milliseconds before the event. So we didn't have a Big Bang. What we had was a big flow. And now, after discovering a galaxy that was came around roughly 4 billion years after the Big Bang supposedly took place 13.4 billion years ago, we must have had multiple big flows and probably still do, which is explaining why we're still expanding. So big flow is what we think it is. And we know there's something beyond our own universe because they discovered dark flow a couple of years ago, and it's coming into our universe, emerging into our universe from outside of it. So all of these things, when you start looking at it all together and kind of put everything in perspective, it makes sense, and that's where we're going, and that's the way we're studying. We had to develop a path, and we kind of let the data develop the path for us, and we went with it.
Hey, David, we have a question for you from the chat room. It's from Open Gate. I'm just going to read it because I'm not, you know, like I said, I don't really know a lot about, you know, quantum mechanics or whatever. But it just says, could David give us any idea about the limitation of frequencies at the range?
Frequencies of what?
I'm sorry, it said, let me get back there. Could David give us any idea about the limitations of frequency, the range, question mark?
Oh, tell him to, like, quit smoking pot and, like, pay attention. Don, okay. Don, quit smoking pot and pay attention. that's like a partial question. I mean, he's asking me to explain frequency limitations, but, I mean, the frequency limitation is the EMF spectrum, which goes from, you know, as low down as infrasound, you know, mm-hmm. which 1 hertz, 0 hertz, all the way up to, you know, cosmic rays, which are, you know, in the maybe 200 or 300 nanometer range, somewhere up in there, way above light. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a very broad spectrum of EMF radiation.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about infrasound a little bit. I was watching this great documentary called Ghosts of the Underground. It was about, you know, the subway in London. And there was a researcher, and he said that all paranormal activity, events, whatever, can be associated with this infrasound, that somehow it causes people to hallucinate, you know, audio as well as visually.
Sure.
Do you think that, you know, that there's any truth to that?
I know there's truth to it.
Okay.
Here's the problem. I've done some development work in non-lethal weaponry, and low-frequency sound as well as low-frequency EMF affect the human body in many different ways. It affects any animal body, actually. But our brains are, we have frequencies that trigger certain things that we generate in our brain.
Mm-hmm.
If those frequencies are emulated close enough to our center, our receptor center, we can duplicate those effects artificially by stimulating the brain. Dr. Michael Persinger has been doing it for years mm-hmm. with his God Helmet experiments, but audio also will do it, particularly subsonics. Subsonic weaponry is being used as we speak. It's used to repel pirates. It's used to do all sorts of things because it's a non-lethal deterrent. It's used to guard portals and tunnels and bridges in the United States. People probably aren't aware of that, but since 9/11, those things have been implemented. But very low frequency infrasound is you see it a lot in taller buildings. It can be caused by internal mechanics, such as air handlers, things of that nature. It can be caused by the wind. In New York City, you have a lot of problems with infrasound, and in Chicago as well, because of the wind affecting the buildings and causing them to vibrate at very low frequencies. And the inside of the building itself creates a resonance from the cavity, mm-hmm. and it can amplify it until people can get sick. You get people that have headaches, people mm-hmm. get sick from it.
Mm-hmm.
And it affects them in a lot of different ways. But yes, frequency. See, the consciousness is a big part of this equation. Are we responding to something in the environment stimulating us? Or are we responding to something in the environment that is physically interacting with us?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the question that you always have to ask when you enter into one of these situations when you're doing an investigation and gathering data. Are you being stimulated into perceiving what you're perceiving, or are you perceiving what you're perceiving? And instrumentation helps dramatically with that. If you are looking at all these different aspects of the environment, you can pretty well tell, oh, man, look, we've got the geophone over here is just going, you know, crazy. So we've got some kind of low-frequency infrasound going on. Maybe we're being affected by that. Let's bring some stuff in and look for that specifically. And that's the things you got to do. You got to rip away all the normal things and resist the urge to jump up and down squealing, yelling, I have a spike, and mm-hmm. actually look for what's going on there and try to determine through analysis what the thing is really doing. You know, what's going on? Are you being affected? Oftentimes mm-hmm. we find people are being affected by natural conditions occurring in the environment and they don't realize it.
Mm-hmm. See, now it's funny that you should, you know, talk about Chicago. You know, I'm a native of Chicago, and one of our most famous hauntings is from the Eastland disaster
mm-hmm.
That occurred. I think, you know what, Mike, maybe you could tell me in the chat room right now if I'm right. I think it was about 1902 or 1912, sometime around there.
Yeah, and, the turn of the century. It was back there.
Right. Now, a lot of people who are walking around in that general area where the Eastland capsized, they always talk about that they get like a very sick feeling that people actually see apparitions, but these apparitions, they don't really act like they're really noticing you. Do you think that this is like could be a big cause for what we know as residual hauntings? Because this whole Eastland thing appears to be that's what it is.
Well, there's a couple things it could be. I mean, residual hauntings could also be due to wormhole activity. Why? Because wormholes not only can connect two different vectors in space, they can also connect two different vectors in time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very possible that there could be, because of the massive amount of wormhole formation from death at that location historically, that it recurs and reoccurs at its own rate for who knows what it is, you know. But people will experience those opening up and may see things as they historically took place. They're actually seeing the historical event. That happens a lot on battlefields where you have, you know, thousands of people killed in a very small area. People will walk there and see an entire military formation, you know, march out and get killed in front of their eyes, and they probably really are seeing it actually happen. And that's the cool thing about it. It could also, what's neat about the theory is it would explain just about everything in the paranormal, if it's true. It turns out to be true. It means that UFOs can travel across our galaxy without breaking the theory of relativity or the speed of light. It also means that crypto beasts could be coming from another reality, blinking in, interacting for a period of time, and blinking back out, which would explain why we don't find their bones or anything left behind of them. But literally just about anything that we label paranormal could be explained by this conduit blinking in and out and causing these things to be able to interact with our reality. But in answer to your question specifically, sure, who am I to say? There could be many different things causing the things that we are perceiving, and until we study it more and know more about it, we really can't come to a conclusion.
Right.
So, but here's my question. I know. this isn't
She's full of them, Dave. Oh, my God.
I'm full of it. Well, that's because I am an interviewer, darn it. I often wonder if we create our own ghosts out of the expectations that we have. Now, I don't necessarily think that accounts for everything, but I think that the mind is a very powerful thing. So, say I am someplace that I have been told is ridiculously haunted, and I go in there and I have a ridiculously haunted experience because I saw Zach Bagans have the same type of experience on Ghost Adventures, for instance. Just, you know, for instance. So, what's to say that either A, I haven't projected that with my mind somehow, or B, I haven't somehow caused this wormhole to open up to draw this energy there?
Oh, hold on a second. Maybe that wormhole is what he's talking about when he's like, you know, this demon is going to drag us straight to hell.
Straight to hell!
Well, here's the thing. You know, you bring up a very valid point, but here's the thing. Have you had yourself measured to see if you're generating this energy?
No.
Well, don't you think that would be a good place to start?
Well, yeah, that'd be an awesome place to start. But how do you measure that? I mean, I have to go into, like, the Church of Scientology and have my feelings measured?
No. Listen to what I'm saying, though. What we are talking about are things we are measuring in the environment. The signs of the paranormal event are measurable effects in the environment.
Right.
So if you were generating them with your consciousness, then it stands to reason that we would be able to make the same measurements on you, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. These are the things that we're doing with the medium experiments right now to see just how far that connection is made. Because, yes, like you, I believe that the consciousness is a huge factor in what we're dealing with. And we understand so little about the human consciousness.
Yes.
However, we should be able to read the effects and the point where the actual, see, we go beyond the effects that everyone measures, and we look at the interface where the effects emerge from. But what we measure should be, if it is duplicated within our realm, should be measurable in our realm to a source. Would you agree with that?
Say it again.
Absolutely.
Say it in another way.
Okay. If we are measuring something related to a paranormal event, and it is created by a consciousness that is amongst the living, then theoretically the source of it should be measured or traceable back to that consciousness.
Yes.
Its source.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're with me there, right?
With you so far. Sorry about that. Okay.
You know what? You know what, guys? I'm just going to kind of like sit back with my thumb in my mouth right now while you guys talk about this. So, you know, please go right ahead.
The point is you look for the emerging point.
Okay.
My idea is if it is being created by the consciousness, then the source will be traceable back to that consciousness.
Okay.
And if it is not, it will be traced to an emerging point in the environment. And that's okay. And that's the two options you have. It's either going to be one or the other. Have we encountered both? Yes, we have. We've encountered both situations where we have seen a person manipulating the environment, and we have seen something emerge into the environment. So,
but you've done this with psychic mediums. Now, what about just like hysterical people who are really, really prone to believing anything you tell them? Have you followed those people around as well to see if they might generate such an energy?
Well, see, I try to stay away from people like that.
Yeah, me too.
I have like three ex-wives that all fall into that category before their untimely deaths. And they all
so you didn't follow them around with meters or anything and say, no, get all hysterical, honey, now.
No, I followed them around with baseball bats and knives. Seriously, I'm just kidding. No, we haven't worked with normal people other than team members, which, you know, how can I say they're normal? They're on my team.
Yeah,
so,
right.
But we do monitor everyone on our group because we believe that the observer effect in quantum mechanics should be taken into account no matter what you're doing.
Yes, could you wait?
Measure this stuff.
So you just said observer effect. Could you please explain that so that people who don't know what that is?
Well, the observer effect is what in quantum mechanics is used to determine whether you have a particle or a wave.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the observer's position and where the particle or the wave is measured determines whether it's going to be a particle or a wave. Wave-particle duality is actually a part of quantum mechanics, whereas a particle can be something like solid mass, or it could be a wave of radiation,
right?
Depending on where it is, what its location is, and when you measure it.
And it always exists as a... Go ahead.
You can't predict one. You can't predict both. You can predict one or the other, but you can never predict both. You can predict a wave, or you can predict a particle, but you can't tell for sure both. You know where
until you measure it.
And that's when the waveform collapses and you have a particle. So we believe that the observer effect is something that needs to be vitally monitored in any research that's being done in this field because we know so little about the field itself anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we wire everybody up for sound and for sometimes for sometimes I have problems with words, galvanic effects. You know, skin resistances, things like that, people.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd love to do is to be able to measure like 8 different aspects of the human body and, you know, just be able to tell what their bodies are doing during different aspects of an investigation.
Right.
What if their respiration elevates, their body temperature changes? You know what I'm saying? It's like it's all part of the mix, and we need to develop our information and our equipment to be able to monitor that. And we're actually working on developing something like that now.
Okay.
You know, where it's kind of like a portable Star Trek diagnostic bed, you know, where you just kind of put these electrodes on your body and it wirelessly transmits them to a receiver and gets a readout. Computers are great things. I mean, you can do a lot with computers.
So I have another one. Sorry. Sorry, Rick.
Oh, my God.
That's okay. You're,
I'm so apologetic. I'm so sorry. I mean,
go ahead.
So here's what I want to know is if you can't measure something without affecting it, and I think that we can both agree that you can't measure something without affecting it because you either have to stop its motion or, you know, you have to affect an object to measure it.
Right.
So how do you ever get a true measurement in what you're doing then?
Well, you have to correlate everything. You have to, first of all, you can't go into a place and do one investigation, measure one set of data, and come out and make a conclusion.
Right.
You can't.
Absolutely.
You have to visit the place when it's active, when it isn't active. You have to take environmental readings over a period of time, and then you correlate things with experiences and other unusual occurrences to see if there's any tie in any location to what's going on. And it isn't necessarily that you need to know the exact measurement of it. You need to know the change of state.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you associate a change of state with what's going on. In other words, it doesn't matter if our ion counter is only 5% accurate, because we're not looking for an exact ion count, we're looking at a ratio of increase or decrease. If okay. the ratio is greater than 5-1, we've got something pretty dramatic going on.
Okay.
And that's how you have to do it. You're right, though. You can't take exact measurements and make any sense of that or have it have any weight. You have to take a grouping or a ratio of change to demonstrate that something kind of dramatic has occurred, because you've used the same people measuring the same effects over a broad period of time, and 15 times that you did it, you came up with this reading, but one time you came up with this reading that's dramatically weird. And then you have to go and beat the bushes to make sure that it's not an artifact, that you just haven't artificially created something, or you've stumbled upon an artifact in the research, what have you. So you have to study, you have to restudy, and you have to study again. You have to debunk, you have to debunk, you have to debunk.
Okay.
You have to test and
research. Golly, that sounds like scientific research.
Yeah.
Hey, well, that's what we do.
Hey, David. We've come up to the top of the hour, so we need to take a quick break. Oh, I'm sorry, I just took my thumb out of my mouth and, you know, came from the corner here. So we need to take a quick break, and you know, we'll be coming back to David Roundtree on Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com.
I know what you are. You drive too fast. You smell so good. And you dress fashionably well.
Say it out loud.
You're a metrosexual?
Oh, why do I always get that? I'm a radio show host.
Kale, I want to be one of them.
And you can be. Join me on ztalkradio.com, 9 p.m. Eastern on Sunday nights. The show's called Perspective.
Hey, do you sparkle?
Oh, my God. Don't even start. Hang on, Spider Monkey.
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Tanya.
And this is Stacy. And we are from Morning Coffee with Tanya and Stacy.
Make sure to tune in Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern,
6 a.m. Pacific, as we have segments which include, but are certainly not limited to, DB University on Mondays,
my useless facts every day, coffee advice, and Stacy's spontaneous outbursts, of course.
We have been known to test every emotion known to man, and we want you to join in on the fun.
Come get your ab workout as you join in with laughter and comedy
right here on ZTalk Radio.
Thank you.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio. This is your host, Rick Hale. I'm here with actually, she's the host, and I'm really the co-host, Karen Frazier.
No, it's okay. I have abdicated the throne.
And we're here with David Rowntree. And David, there's something that I really want to get into, because you did, reference how, it's a possibility that Bigfoot or other cryptids, whatever, are, interdimensional beings. Now, I'm going to be completely honest with you about something. When I see Bigfoot, with my belief in Bigfoot, my belief in ghosts is basically just this. I do believe that Bigfoot, Nessie, whatever, are, completely natural of this world entities. And with ghosts, I still do view ghosts as being the souls of those who have, passed on and for whatever reason still stick around. So basically, this is sort of a an issue of perception. Now, when it comes to ghosts, do you believe that they are the remnants of a human being who's passed away? Survival of intelligence after death?
No, I don't believe as you present that.
Okay.
It's close to what I believe, but not quite exactly. But what you're saying is actually, it's true. I mean, just because we believe something doesn't preclude the fact that what I'm saying or what I'm talking about could be true as well, because we're talking about the effects on an environment. We've mentioned how it may affect a person's perception, and it certainly affects people's perceptions, affects exactly what they believe.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't think we're all off the page. I think we're all on the same page. We're just looking at it from different perspectives is all we're doing. I struggle every day to be objective and to be open-minded and to let the data that I collect lead me to my conclusions instead of me trying to fit it into a preconceived notion. So I try to leave what I believe out of the mix. And I've always said to people, what I believe and what I can prove are two different things. And when I started, they were really, really far apart. But over the years, that gap has narrowed significantly because, of course, my beliefs have morphed as more data has presented itself, so that my beliefs change towards the center as the proof begins to bring it towards the center from the other side. So we're both approaching each other there, approaching my beliefs based on the data observed and the analysis of that data, and it's brought me from a different place from when I started, what I believed when I started. Now, yes, I believe that there is a survival of consciousness after death.
Okay.
There's just too damn much anecdotal evidence to support that. And at some point, even though anecdotal evidence doesn't have a lot of weight, at some point, by sheer preponderance of the evidence,
you have
to give it some weight.
Right.
So, taking that into mind, yes, I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Can I prove it yet? No, but I think I'm getting pretty close. I'm getting to the point where it's close.
But I think science and belief are moving towards one another. My husband and I, he's a big science guy and I'm a big belief person, and we argue round and round and round, and what I keep saying to him is we're arguing the same thing, we're just coming at it from different angles.
You're coming at it, it's semantics. You're arguing semantics is what you're doing.
Right.
You're both making different syntax errors and you're not understanding, but you're saying the same things just from a different context.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's true, because see, here's the thing. And science is starting to realize, I think, now, after 100 years of looking for the grand theory of everything to unify quantum mechanics with physics, they're discovering that, all this stuff that they turn their back on that we call paranormal or metaphysics is part of that mix and needs to be understood and studied if they're ever going to come up with a grand theory of everything. It's got to
be put
back into perspective with the rest of the mix, because I believe the paranormal is nothing more than the normal that we don't understand. And so when science turns their back on it and doesn't study it, and they take the stance of they explain the uninvestigated instead of investigating the unexplained, they're turning their back on a big piece of the puzzle, which is probably why there's no grand theory of everything. So, and more physicists are very interested in the research that we are doing right now and that others like us are doing, because we are doing it correctly. We are presenting viable data that they can look at and understand. And there's an interest, and we even get feedback from them that suggests different ways of doing things for us to make it better. So they're starting to come around. Mostly quantum physicists are starting to come
around
and say, yeah, this is very possible. This is what to look for. It could be this. You know, so that's cool. That's a beginning. So
So don't you think, though, that science can become just as dogmatic as belief?
Oh, it is. Mm-hmm. It's more so, probably.
Well, I think it was Charles Fort that called them the priestcraft.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Seriously, science is empirical. There's no doubt about it. To shape an existing theory. For example, the Big Bang. The Big Bang's pretty well been disproven, and yet it's still taught as the theory in colleges.
It is.
It's going to take 20 years for it to be removed from the explanation for the beginning of the universe because people are so rigidly... I mean, there's people that still don't accept relativity. There's people that still don't accept quantum mechanics, even though it's a beautiful theory. I mean, all of the interpretations of quantum mechanics are beautiful theories, and they work so well.
Yes. Well, David, I still believe the world is flat.
So. Well, that's okay.
I'm joking.
You're allowed to believe whatever you want.
I'm joking. Just saying.
So I have a question in the chat room, David.
Sure.
Andy says, what mechanism is used, in your opinion, for external intelligent forces to manipulate machinery, electronics, or data streams?
That would be like a telekinetic type of event. All I can tell you is, first of all, I can't comment on something that I don't know. And I'll tell you, I don't know. What I have observed is objects being moved by very low frequency, like infrasonic sound waves at very high amplitudes. I'm sure that doesn't explain all of it. That's just what I have happened to been at the right place at the right time with the right equipment running and caught it and seen that and said, you know, it was like a moment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
See, we don't have Eureka moments. We have WTF moments. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's like pretty much my entire life. So.
Yeah. You know, you look over and you see something moving and you look at the instrumentation and you realize that you've got like a 4 hertz audio wave file that's at about 190 decibels. And you're wondering why your skin feels like it's crawling. Mm-hmm. And that's a prime example of something that's causing what appears to be matter being moved by nothing and weird feelings due to the frequency of the sound, the infrasound. And the only thing that wasn't answered is where it came from.
So
we have no idea.
How much of this stuff is, do you think, in your opinion, and I know you can't answer something you don't know, so I'm just asking for an opinion here. How much do you think is attributable the things that people experience when they're out in paranormal locations? How much is attributable to these scientific things that you're finding with the wormholes and things? And how much is attributable to other things like ELF or something?
I can say that it's at least... See, it's hard for me to answer that. I'll tell you why. It's not because of the data. It's like before... It's because of the techniques we use. When we started this, we went into places cold that had never been investigated, didn't know if it was active or not. Spent a lot of research determining if it was active or not, that sort of thing. In that situation, we found that only about 5% of it had to do with the stuff we're talking about, and the rest of it was from natural occurrences or affections of people's. But see, now we go in, we don't go to cold places anymore. We generally get called into a documented active area by another group to assist another group. So every place we go now has activity. And we're finding it's pretty much kind of like a 50-50 mix statistically.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't really tell us anything either, but, I mean, that's the best answer I can give you right now based on what we're doing. I think the large majority of most paranormal reported activity isn't. I think
I agree.
Causing it.
Yeah, I actually think it's about 95%.
You know, we could argue 5% here or there. I mean, it's really difficult to determine that and establish that, but from my experience, I would say that's probably a pretty close guesstimate. And our own debunking has proved out that, and we find a lot of dangerous conditions in people's houses that cause these things, you know, elevated levels of carbon monoxide, their heaters, and, you know, down in their basements, we find that, you know, there's all sorts of weirdness going on from naturally occurring things that they have stored in there or from radon or from whatever. So bad wiring. We identify a lot of problems in people's homes that generally, when it's corrected, takes care of their problem. So I have to say that, you know, I think the vast majority of them are caused by misinterpreted natural occurrences.
You know, that raises a really interesting ethical question, at least for me, maybe not for you. But you have a lot of these really young, new groups who idea of a ghost
on TV.
Yes, thank you. And they're going into people's homes to because there's something going on there, and they don't have the training, and they don't have the understanding that it could be radon, or it could be carbon monoxide, or it could be wiring. Isn't that kind of dangerous?
Well, that's why I wrote my book. It's a perfect segue into my book.
Okay, well, that's good. Let's talk about your book.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, in my book, I cover... it starts out as an equipment manual for every piece of equipment that you've seen on TV and some that you never have and probably never will. But I tell you what it actually measures, how to use it, what it means, and then how to put that bit of data with the rest of your data to slowly build a case, one piece of data at a time based on the equipment you have in hand. And I teach you the right way to use it. I teach you the best piece of equipment to choose to do it with. And then I teach you how to put it together and either make a case for something paranormal or reject it as paranormal and identify it as something natural. The biggest problem people have is not understanding their equipment, not understanding what they're exactly measuring, and then not knowing how to put it together with other data to make a conclusion. I know people that were walking around in this one place. It was a hospital. They were using radiation detectors, and they were just, like, getting bombarded with all kinds of radiation. The problem was they had nothing to determine whether it was alpha, beta, or gamma radiation because they were using their Geiger counters completely unshielded. So they were picking up a wide spectrum. Well, the place was filled with smoke detectors, and all those smoke detectors were radiating alpha radiation into the environment. So
wow.
They had this thing called americium, I think it's called, or americium, which is a product that's used to make the smoke detector, and it emits alpha radiation, which cannot even penetrate your skin. But you have to be able to block everything out but the gamma radiation if you're looking for radiation, because the gamma is what we're interested in. To do that, you have to put a piece of tinfoil over the actual sensor on the meter. That way, the only thing that will get through that is gamma radiation. It'll block the beta and it'll block the alpha. But it's not knowing how to use the equipment and reaching false conclusions based on contaminated data. And the book goes into that. It also goes into some of the different theories I've talked about tonight, as well as others. I lay out a bunch of experiments that you, too, can do at home. And I end it with a chapter on what the scientific method really means. And by the time you get to it, I've tricked you into learning physics, and I've tricked you into learning your equipment, and I've tricked you into understanding the scientific method. So,
but here's the problem. The scientific method and what you're doing, and please don't take this the wrong way. I'm just coming from the average ghost hunter, thrill seeker mind state now. That's not sexy. The scientific method is not. You know, I mean, it's work.
Well, ghost hunting isn't sexy. People make it that way. See, most of the time, you're sitting in the dark, bored to death for hours at a time.
And you don't even need to sit in the dark.
No. Yeah, that's exactly right. Do you know why we sit in the dark? And we don't sit in total darkness. We have a lamp on somewhere.
I would think that it would be to remove variables.
Well, what it does is it lowers the sound floor.
Yeah.
You've got a noise floor that's naturally occurring, and it has everything in it from the microwave background radiation from the beginning of the universe, supposedly. To the wall outlets, to everything else in the room. But by decreasing the power that's unnecessary, you can lower that noise floor. And, of course, EMF that generates EVP tends to be very close to the noise floor because it's very low level. So you increase your chances of getting good EVPs by doing that. Most of the time on TV, they're doing that for dramatic effect. But we tend to not like to trip over things and break the client's vase and things like that. So we leave one lamp on, usually a low wattage lamp somewhere, so that you can see well enough to navigate.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. So now say that I'm actually a ghost hunter who doesn't care that ghost hunting is sexy, and I actually care about the science, and I don't want to do things I see on TV. So where am I going to go get your book? And what is it?
It's available at any online bookstore in just about every country of the world. The quickest shippers right now are Amazon. They've been shipping them out within 2 days. People have been getting them 2 days after they order them, which is phenomenal. They're at Barnes & Noble. I avoided the whole brick-and-mortar bookstore route. And the reason being is because I targeted my audience specific for those who would get the most use out of the book. So I went around and I joined a lot of paranormal, focusing sites. I prepped the introduction of the book ahead of time, told people what it would be about, laid some teasers out so people could get a feel for what it was going to be like to read it. And then when I released it, it was targeted specifically at the folks that would buy it and that would get the most out of it. And I did very efficient promotion doing that. So it's all based on online because all of us are online freaks. All of us people who are ghost hunters, from the weekend warrior types to the people that are seriously into it for the science part of it, we are all in front of our computers. And we live on the computer. We do our research on the computer. And that's where I went. I said, okay, I'm targeting the people that are like us.
Smart. So how has it been received? I would imagine you get kind of dual reactions to the, you're shattering my little world of belief. How dare you?
And believe it or not, I'm sure you read Rob's, review of it. Rob and I now talk all the time about it. But, I lay it out in such a way as to not offend anyone. And I write it in an entertaining way. And I warn people when they're going to have something that may give them a headache, So
I'm going to lay awake for hours tonight, frankly. So
you have to read my book. See?
Since you've targeted it to the online community, I read all my books on my iPad. And am I going to be able to get it on my iPad?
Yes, it's available as an ebook for a much cheaper price than as a print book, which is another reason why I targeted the internet, because ebook sales are just as big as the paper version of it. So I'm selling just as many of those as I'm selling the paper version. So,
yeah, I haven't read a paper book in a long, long time.
That's why they're disappearing.
Yeah, ebooks are like going to be the vast majority of book sales in the future. I'm sorry, there are people that are purists like me that have books.
Yeah, I have lots of books.
And we always will. But the problem is people want to take their library with them on an investigation. They want to take their reference with them.
Yes.
So they take their iPad or their tablet, whatever, or their e-reader, whatever they've got, and they have their entire reference library with them at their fingertips on an investigation. I do it. Just about everybody I know that, is doing it at the same level that we're doing it does that, because they'll be in the 3 o'clock in the morning, something weird happens, you're going, I read something about, I also have like a little cheat sheet in mine where I have an index of all the books loaded in it, of everything in those books and where it is.
Oh,
so I can go in, flip through a couple of drop-down menus and find exactly the passage I'm looking for and go to it. That's the kind of thing that you stay awake late at night working on.
Yeah. See, now, the reason that I actually really like the ebooks is because I can make the print really big, and then I don't have to wear my glasses or hold my arms out really far from my face.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's great for that, too. It's absolutely great for that. There's a lot of different motivations for having ebooks, and ebook was something that, that was the big deal when I published the book. It had to be available in all e-formats, from PDF to... Mm-hmm. And, of course, when you put a book out in PDF, it gets ripped off dramatically.
Yes, it does.
People steal your book, and they distribute it, and you don't get a dime for it. And I'm hoping that people will be honest about it and, just pay the cost for the book, Not that big a deal.
Right. So the other thing I noticed is that your website seems to have a lot of research and information on it. So
I share my research.
So could you tell people how to get to how to find you on the internet?
Yeah, it's real easy. You can either Google me and go through the I think it's 64 pages of information, but the easiest way is to go to www.spinvestigations.org. And if you want purchase links for the book, you can click on the big graphic of the book in the center of the page, and it takes you to a page that has like a lot of major links all over the world where you can buy the book at, essentially. So, I mean, you can go there. There's also a preview in a embedded, I think it's an embedded Kindle, a Kindle displayer there that's embedded on the page that allows you to preview, I think, up to a chapter, depending on, you know, how you jump around in it. But you can get an idea of the book for free there. And I expect people that, when they read it, to email me and tell me what they thought or what they'd suggest to do different, because this is the kind of book that will be reissued in a few years to be updated, because it's got that much good information in it that
see it as being
kind of like a manual for paranormal groups.
Well, and who knows what you'll find between now and then, too. So
that's the idea. I mean, the whole wormhole thing came just before it went to publish and was thrown in with no reason. So when you get to the whole thing with the math that proves out the wormhole theory, it's basically inserted just before it went to press. So there's no warning it's coming. It just kind of appears, you know, like kind of out of context. And that's the only rough spot of the book, because I felt it was so important I had to put it in, because it would be a couple of years before I would rewrite the book and reissue it. So I put it in, and I apologized to people afterwards. I said, you know, I don't give you a warning that that's coming. It's like, boom, here it is. Mm-hmm. And it's in context, kind of, but it's a quantum leap from where you're reading to where it
appears, you know? Right.
And I usually try to ease the reader into that, and I didn't for that, because I had no time, and it was so important I wanted to make sure it got in, because I wanted people to shoot it down, prove it wrong, so that I could turn around and refocus.
This is your process of peer review.
Exactly. If they could shoot it down, then I can say, okay, we're doing something wrong, and it saves me time. So, yeah. And this is why we share all our work, and we encourage people to duplicate what we do,
right.
When we build a piece of equipment, we tell you how we did it, what it took to put it together, and where we got the stuff from, and encourage you to do it and tell us if it's the same thing that you got, or tell us we're all wet, you know. But, you know, replicate what we're doing and tell us if we're wrong and tell us what you find.
Right.
So, I mean, that's what it's all about. You got to do that.
Yep. So we are just about out of time, because we have another guest coming up here for the last little part of the show. But I wanted to ask you if you could just kind of distill, if you had just a couple minutes to tell investigators what you wanted them to know, what would it be?
I would say, don't believe anything anyone tells you. Prove it to yourself.
Ah, beautiful.
Very good. Love it.
Very
love
nice.
It, love it, love it.
Like it very much. Okay, so people can check out your book. I got to pull up the name, or you can say the name really fast. You can beat me to it. Say the name.
Paranormal Technology, Understanding the Science of Ghost Hunting, and my website is www.spininvestigations.org.
Well, you, sir, have blown my mind, but in a good way.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
My brain's actually full.
I know. Stomach empty, brain full. Yes, thank you very much. I hope that you'll come back on in the future.
Absolutely.
You know, I think we've probably just scratched the surface of it, but we need to let Rit recover and maybe get his blood glucose back up.
Absolutely.
All of that stuff. So, okay, so we will be back in just a couple of minutes, and we're going to be talking to somebody who is doing a new paranormal show. So we'll be back with that in just a minute on Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
And Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking. So keep it real, keep it real. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ed Council.
Hi, it's John here from Haunted Cornwall FM in the UK.
We will be on Z-Talk now on a Sunday afternoon from 3 till 5 Eastern. We do talk all about the paranormal. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's paranormal. Audience are invited to get involved. If you've got questions, ask, because we've got a superb team that will be able to answer them. We don't sensationalise, we just tell the truth. However, if we find out there are fakes about, we will name and shame them. You've got to listen in to Haunted Cornwall FM from the UK on Z-Talk, 3 till 5 Eastern.
Hi, this is Nick Redfern, and you're listening to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio on ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Rick Hale. I'm here with Karen Frazier. And Karen, before we go on to our next guest, I must tell you, my brain is full, and I will probably be up all night long having nightmares about things that I don't quite understand yet.
Well, so that's what I say. That's why we need to let you just kind of let your blood sugar readjust, and well, you'll be that, fine.
I think it's because I come from a purely spiritual spiritualist approach to, you know, paranormal research investigation. But moving right along, right now is joining us is Leela Tran from Screaming Flea Productions, and she's here tonight to, you know, give us a heads up and talk a little bit about a show that her and her her colleagues are going to be doing for whatever cable television station. Hi, Leela. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me tonight. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you just fine.
You hear you just fine.
I love this because what you're doing is, I keep calling it paranormal intervention, and it kind of is that, isn't it?
It pretty much is because, you know, we are going to be providing, you know, treatment, therapeutic assistance for people who basically have been traumatized by some sort of paranormal or supernatural experience that they've had in their life. And it's a serious look, you know, at what can happen when somebody is adversely affected by such an encounter. So it's a chance for somebody to get help that, you know, and it's not a show where we're trying to exploit people by any means, because that's not our purpose at all. Right. It's a way, I mean, we're having a licensed mental health professional, a therapist, come on board to provide this person with therapeutic assistance to help them confront their fears, confront their anxiety, and hopefully be able to, you know, learn the skills in order to cope and also overcome their trauma. It should be interesting.
I think that a show of this nature is it's about time, you know, considering all the other shows that are on there. It's, you know, it's all turns, you know, basically now it just seems like to be a spectator sport.
Hello?
Yeah, sorry, we had a little No, it's okay. We had a little bit of a lag. We get that sometimes.
Yeah, we get that sometimes. No, as I was saying, it's it seems like paranormal investigation and research now is kind of a spectator sport. But with your show, what's great about it is that you are actually offering answers and help to people, rather than just, throwing some investigator in there and they leave. It's like, hey, we got you a few fuzzy pictures. We got you a video. We got you a few EVPs, but we're out of here. Have fun with that, horrible malicious entity that's ripping your life to shreds. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's a good point, Rick, because, we've been wanting to do, some sort of paranormal show, but there are so many shows out there already,
The market's a little saturated.
Just a little. But, it's like, but nobody has ever really, focused on the person who's being affected.
Right.
And what's happening to them. And because it's like, well, what happens when these, as you said, Rick, when these guys leave? Then what happens to the person?
Right.
Because I'm sure they have to be so affected by it mentally, emotionally, psychologically, that it takes some time to recover from that. And sometimes people come to the point where if they can't talk about it or they're too scared to talk about it, it becomes extreme in all kinds of ways where they can't, just for example, they have insomnia or they develop some kind of phobia. Mm-hmm. Or they just kind of disassociate themselves from family and friends. And so,
They may even have PTSD,
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, and that's part of the therapeutic assistance that will be involved in the show is, behavioral therapy, where that seems to be, a technique that's often used for people with PTSD or anxiety disorders or issues.
The CBT cognitive, are you talking about CBT, cognitive behavior therapy?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, where the person is confronted is, the therapist has the patient or the client confront their fear situation or their fear thoughts and their feared, memories in order for them to be able to hopefully understand where that fear is coming from and where that trauma originated from, and hopefully be able to overcome that. So,
Now I know. Oh, I'm sorry, I interrupted you guys.
Oh no, I was just going to say I'm actually looking at a list of some of the shows that you guys have done, and I recognize some of them. Hoarders, huh?
Yes, exactly. And
we love that show. My wife and I.
Do
love
you?
It.
Oh, yeah. I got somebody for you. Oh, never mind. Sorry.
Wrong show, Karen.
Yeah.
but actually our new show is kind of similar basically to Hoarders. Our approach is similar to Hoarders because with this show, like Hoarders, aftercare will also be provided to the person too.
Right.
So it's not like, we have the person on the show and the therapist works with them on the show, and then when we're gone, it's like, okay, thanks for having us, goodbye.
Yeah.
Because it's just the first step. It's not an overnight cure or, success or anything. They need continued help, continued treatment. And so that's where the aftercare comes in.
Right.
Well, in my own investigations, I've been, investigating the paranormal now for, about 20 years and researching for almost 30. And I've actually investigated some hauntings where people are, they're almost to the point where it's like, I am going to kill myself if if you don't do anything about this. And I've actually come across that maybe once or twice. And, if you don't understand what you're dealing with, it could be quite devastating to a person.
Most definitely. Yeah. So what happened to those people that you worked with?
Well, the first girl that I ever did, that doesn't sound too good. The first investigation I ever did,
I think
she was an 18-year-old girl, and she was dealing with some dark entities that were put on her by a curse. She was in some kind of weird satanic cult. And, that was the first, but not the last time I've actually been physically attacked by something. We were able to get her some kind of help through the clergy. And from what I understand now, I'm going to call her Trina. That's not her real name, of course. But, you know, Trina is actually married to a doctor now and has a family of her own.
So, that's good.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's good. I mean, you know, although I wasn't able to, you know, help her in that respect, I was only an 18-year-old kid. But, you know, I was able, you know, we were able to get her to a place where it's like, yeah, I could talk to a priest and maybe he can help me out. I don't think they really did so much as an exorcism, but just sort of a cleansing with her because, you know, she wasn't possessed. She was just being oppressed.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that's important that, you know, that you did that and, you know, maybe you couldn't help, but you were able to refer her to somebody who could provide her the help. And I think that's important and that to let people know that there is help out there, that you're not alone and that, you know, you're not, what you're experiencing is not making, that doesn't make you crazy by any means.
No, not at all.
Right. And it's all about just trying to get to a point where you're having a more functional, healthier life just for yourself and for those around you.
Right. So you are in, pretty much you're in pre-production still. You're doing some, you're researching and looking for stories. Is that correct?
That is correct. So right now we are searching for individuals who would be willing to share their story with us and also receive, you know, therapeutic assistance with the therapist on our show and afterwards aftercare. So we're reaching out to people who, you know, have nowhere else to turn or don't know where to turn. You know, I think this is something that they could benefit from. And, you know, I'd be happy to talk more with them directly via email. You know, I can give them my email address or, you know, however you want to, you know, however you want to deal with that. But
well,
we are looking for people.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So how can we at Paranormal Underground help you get people? Do you want to give out your email address or do you want to have them contact us and we funnel them to you? Or how do you want to do that?
Sure. Well, we set up a email address, your Gmail, where you can email us directly, and that email, those emails will go to me. And it's trauma.paranormal@gmail.com.
Say it again.
So
say it one more time.
It's trauma.paranormal@gmail.com.
Okay. All right. And here's what I want to do really quickly before we ask any more questions, because I want people to understand that you are the real deal. I have your website up.
Yes.
I want to just name off some of the shows that you have done so that people get that this isn't just a fly-by-night protect. You know what I'm saying? So you've done, you're currently in production with Hoarders, Sell This House, and Three Sheets. Three Sheets is not one I know.
But I love Three Sheets.
Oh, okay.
That is one of my favorite shows
on the
net. Oh, I know Three Sheets. Yeah, I'm not a drinker, but yeah, I love the show. I think it's great.
So, Adventures in Doggy Daycare. Let's see. Knievel's Wild Ride. Move This House. Pop Psy. Pulse.
Yeah.
You guys have done a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and also we did one that was really interesting, I think, last year. It was about Jesse James' Hidden Treasure on the History Channel. So that was kind of like a modern-day treasure hunt. So that was kind of cool.
I would like that one. That would be really cool, yeah. Okay, now, and you work with like A&E and History Channel and a lot of major TV stations.
Cable networks.
Networks. Yeah. That's the word I'm looking for.
No worries. Yeah, we worked with a variety of major cable networks, you know, like you mentioned A&E, but, you know, like Discovery Health, Biography. So, yeah, we have extensive, you know, experience in working with nonfiction programming. And Hoarders is one where, you know, we can relate to as far as this new show is concerned, is that, you know, we take a serious, grounded look approach it with a serious tone and, you know, because we're dealing with real people, you know?
Yes.
Real people who need help and who, you know, want therapeutic assistance. So it's not something to mess with. So.
Right.
Now, have you had a lot of, you know, takers yet? Have you had a lot of people contact you? Hey, I got this story to tell and, you know, it's pretty wild. Can you help me? Have you had that yet?
No, not so much. I think people are, you know, obviously understandably skeptical. And or they're really scared because they don't want to be known as crazy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's understandable. That's a common, I'm assuming that's a common, you know, perception.
No, it is a common perception. Usually when it's like I'm talking to somebody, they're like, you know, I don't want you to think I'm crazy, but it's like, no, I don't think you're crazy. You may be, you know, you may not, you know, think you're experiencing something that you're really not, but at the same time, hey, you could be experiencing something that's horrible. So, yeah,
exactly, definitely. Exactly. And, you know, with this show, our point is not going to be, oh, we're going to prove or debunk your experience. That's not going to be our focus. Because
right.
we know that your reaction and your trauma or your anxiety is very real.
Right.
And that's what we're focusing on. And and we know that it's causing you, you know, heartache or psychological effects within your life. And that's real. So we want to focus on that and help you with that. So,
right.
You know.
So the other thing that might be, because we have a lot of paranormal investigators who listen to our show and who read the magazine and come on our forums, and they may know some people who are traumatized that they can reach out to for you, too. So if you're listening and you have some clients that you have some concern about how they've dealt with all of this, you can either have them contact us or have them contact Leila directly at that email she gave. And you can go on the website, too, just to get an idea of what type of stuff they do at Screaming Flea Productions Incorporated up in Seattle. It's www.sfpseattle.com, right?
Yep, that is correct.
Okay. All right.
Outstanding.
Very good. So, yeah. Oh, look, do you have any idea when this is going to wind up on the air?
I honestly don't know, because we're such in the beginning stages and we're still working out a production schedule, and, you know, you know, dotting the I's, crossing the T's. I honestly can't tell you when it's going to air. So I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, it's just, we're concentrating on, like, trying to make sure that we have the right stories and the right individuals who need the help and, you know, and going from there. So.
Right.
Well, it definitely sounds like a great show, and I personally can't wait to see that this is actually taking a more grounded approach rather than just, you know, starting with the whole assumption or premise of going into investigation. It's like you're either stupid or you're crazy or you're drunk or stoned or whatever. This is, you know, this is definitely something that's very timely right now.
Yeah, so we had one guy who came on, and he was in doing an investigation. We should put him in contact with you. Seriously, he has PTSD. I don't know why I didn't think about this, but he was actually investigating, and he got deep scratches that required, do you remember how many stitches?
He had like 43 or 48
stitches. He said when he went to the hospital and they said, what happened? How did you get these scratches? And he told them they put him in observation for 70-something hours. They kept him.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they kept him for sight.
Quite serious, actually.
So Cheryl says she's actually already put you in touch with him. So my brilliant idea has already been had before.
Well, that's, you know, great minds think alike. So there you go.
That's right. Okay, so give out that email address one more time.
Okay, it is trauma.paranormal@gmail.com. And, of course, you know, people can contact you guys and, you know, you can direct them to me. If people are more comfortable with that, that's fine, too.
Yes, we'd be happy to do that. Very good. Okay, well, Leila, thank you so much for coming on. I'm looking forward to seeing this show.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. And thanks for letting me share, you know, our exciting new project with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope you'll come on later when you're closer and you can, you know, like, not have to kill us if you tell us things.
Definitely. It won't be so top secret by then.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leila.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. That's very cool.
That sounds like a great show. I really honestly can't wait to see that.
Yeah. I actually really like that one. Now, I've never seen Hoarders, but, you know, I know a lot of people really like it, and they've done some real legitimate stuff, it looks like. So we're
definitely
good there.
Definitely.
Yep. Okay, so we have a new magazine. I think we have a new magazine online. So it's the April issue. Cheryl, can you please just come on and say what's on the April issue, please? Oh, no, we don't. I lied. We don't have a new magazine out yet. We're going to have one coming out soon. This is what I get when I, you know.
That's quite all right, Karen.
Well, see, he blew my mind, too.
No, you know what? And that's what I like. I mean, even though I come from a purely spiritualist way of researching and investigating the paranormal, it's also good to get, you know, I don't really want to call it an opposing viewpoint, but it's definitely more of like a scientific viewpoint. Although, hey, I like the science of it, too. But, you know, I believe in the human soul.
Yeah, but I don't think he said that there's no such thing as the human soul, Rick.
Oh, no. That is absolutely not what I am suggesting. Okay. But I just, you know, I'm gonna come kicking and screaming to the whole quantum physics way of looking at, you know, investigating and researching the paranormal. I do find it interesting though, and thank God for you, Karen, because like I said, I just like curled up in a corner here, sucking on my thumb for that, you know, 20 or 30 minutes thinking, it's got to be over soon. It's got to be over soon. Go to my happy place.
Yeah, you just fine. You did just fine. And, you know, I guess the main thing that's important that I think is that people understand that just because you can prove something scientifically does not take away any validity from spiritual explanations. They're not mutually exclusive. I've never believed that science and faith are mutually exclusive.
See, and that's kind of one of the things that's always bothered me about a lot of these television shows that were like, you know, we're going in to disprove or debunk. One of the big things that bothers me is you know, recreating something that, you know, a spirit may have done. Just because you can recreate the phenomenon doesn't mean that you explain the vehicle behind the phenomenon.
Right. Exactly. You're so, right. Yeah. So, Rick.
Yes.
Speaking of being dragged straight to hell, I know that's like not really a segue. It's more like a non sequitur. Mm-hmm. But next week, we are going to be dragged straight to hell on our radio show.
Yes.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited too. You know, this is a great guest. And although I haven't talked to, you know, Bobby Mackey yet, you know, I've been kind of like, you know, going back and forth with his agent. And he seems pretty pumped about being on our show, and it's going to be great to finally get to talk to this guy because,
yeah,
you know, we've read so much, we've seen so much, you know, on the television shows, and personally, you know, I know that, you know, that a lot of the television shows are like, well, this place is full of demons. No, I just think it's, you know, full of some really douchey spirits who, you know, because they were miserable in life, they want to make people as miserable too.
Yeah.
I doubt there's anything demonic there. I just think they're malicious human spirits. But yeah, we're going to be talking about Bobby Mackey and Bobby Mackey's music world.
Awesome.
Next week. And it's great. Now, here's the cool thing. My mom is from Dayton, Kentucky, which is right by Wilder, Kentucky. And I remember one time we actually drove past Bobby Mackey's music world and I saw the man himself standing outside. That was pretty cool.
Well, next week you're going to be talking to the man himself. I'm really excited about it. Okay, so next week join us 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 11 Eastern. Go ahead, Rick. Don't make me say flyover.
Oh, yes. No, we're not the flyover state. Chicago is a world-class city. Anyways, we're in the central time zone, so we're 8 to 10 p.m. Central.
There you go. So looking forward to next week with Bobby Mackey. Until then, paranormalunderground.net. Thanks for listening to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z Talk Radio.
We're out.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Guy Who Wants His Own Paranormal TV Show.
Mr. Guy Who Wants His Own Paranormal Show.
You wear your beans with pride and your t-shirt three sizes too small, even though you have the body of a 98-pound video game nerd. Every location you visit may have a gift shop and thousands of visitors, but somehow you still get possessed by something evil.
You're dragging me straight to hell.
It may look like a bug to the rest of the world, but to you it's a demonic orb, and it wants to eat your soul. So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Mr. Overly Dramatic. Your acting may not be all that great, but you sure look awesome every time you see yourself in the mirror.
The guy who wants his own paranormal show.
Budweiser Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.